Hello? Oh no, she's dead.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
It's all shits and giggles till somebody dies.
It's Tuesday, my dude.
Welcome back. Another week. Another show.
My mum's dead and so's her dad.
Thanks, Tash.
You're welcome. Just thought I'd let everyone know.
Why we're here today.
To talk about death. To talk about what funny business it is.
We're in such a weird mood
today. We're in a really weird mood. I feel like there's been hysteria. There's been stress. There's been travel issues. There's been some illness. There's been...
more hysteria.
Yeah.
We're here for an hour to talk about...
all kinds of business.
All kinds of business, yeah. And...
well, not really. Just death.
Just death. No, but how it's fucked up our whole life.
Yeah, how it's our entire personality now. Yeah. How it affects everyone, because at the end of the day...
we're all going to die.
We are. We're all going to die. And that's okay.
But it's we also laugh through it, don't we? That's kind of the whole point of this.
We literally laugh in the face of death. we've got a really cool show today, actually.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be...
educational.
It's going to be an educational show, and we're going to have a very serious, important conversation about assisted dying.
With Nathan Stillwell.
Yeah.
Who is a campaign manager for My Death, My Decision.
Mm-hmm. And he's going to be talking to us all about assisted dying and how important it is, and I'm actually really, really interested in it because I think it's a really, really important topic that a lot of people find very uncomfortable. I think our show is a good place for him to kind of discuss with our listeners about what it means and what it doesn't mean, because I think there's a lot of misconception about assisted dying and whether it's, you know, if it's, it sounds really horrendous and it actually can be really, really merciful. And yeah. But how are you, Becky?
How am I? I'm actually still quite ill.
Yeah, you're a little bit like...
a bit, everyone thinks
that... A bit phlegmy. What?
Yeah, I'm phlegmy. No, but I'm fine. I think I'm just, my brain is not working at the moment.
Right.
I think everyone in the studio noticed that earlier. I do feel
like, bless producer Yaz, has like been trying to follow our train of thoughts this afternoon, and it's been like we're all just like on a plane of misunderstanding.
Yeah. And I think I'm just in a... Do you know what? I actually think I've been grieving quite a lot recently as well.
Oh, yeah?
Like, but not kind of aware that I'm grieving.
Very on brand. Well done. Good job.
Shut up. What do you mean to talk about?
No, I'm being serious. I know it's funny, but, like, I actually, like... I'm like, you know, go on, tell us.
You know, this is my safe space to talk about how I feel, and you're just laughing
Sorry,
at
no,
me.
It wasn't supposed to be like a sarcastic, like, put down.
I know, it was supposed to be like a joke.
Tell me.
What have you been grieving?
I don't actually know.
I just feel like I'm just wanting to cry, and I can't cry.
No, I get that.
Have you ever had that?
Yeah, all the time.
I'm just standing in the shower going... I just can't cry.
Like, she sounds like you're taking a shit in the shower. Jesus fucking Christ.
It's probably easier to shit than it is to cry at the moment.
Probably. Do you know what? I know that I talk about it all the time, but where are you in your cycle?
Oh, shut up.
No, because when I ovulate, I don't ovulate. Oh, yeah, we've talked about this
a million times. Poor Kieran, the producer, is just like, I don't want to hear about this again.
Maybe Yaz doesn't want to hear about it.
Yaz wants to hear about it.
Just because Kieran's a boy.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Yeah, Becky, geez. Check your misogyny right there.
I know, I should actually.
Anyway.
Can we talk about your pent-up energy?
My pent-up energy?
Yeah. So before we came in here,
I wrote it down.
Because
I
you
just
said
think I'm like in a really excitable, like happy.
You're happy?
Yeah.
Okay. I was a bit nervous.
If life.
Right.
Because I feel like me and you, we've got a lot going on. There's a lot in the works. There's like, so we've started our new like Becky and Tash page on all the socials. Sorry for your lost loves, which is like our little space, which is going to be all about death and
funny videos
and all the stuff from the pod that like, and the show that we want to share with you guys more and like everything. But also there's just a lot going on. There's like acting stuff and there's this stuff, and then there's like trying to go to my actual job and then try and eat, sleep, and then I'm like, one of my friends said, like, do you want to come out clubbing on Saturday? And not that I normally do that, because I'm just, it's just not, but I just was like, yes.
You need
a boogie. You need a boogie.
You actually said that last year, though. You said that you really wanted to go and have a dance.
Yeah, I just really, really, like, need to just, like,
let loose. I'm so excited for you.
What about you?
What about me?
Obviously, with the crying and the...
Yeah. What about me?
The not crying. Stuff's been going on.
Stuff's been going on.
You want to tell us?
I want to tell you.
Go on, say it.
So...
Just say it. It's fine.
Is it fine?
Yeah, it's fine. Shall I say it?
Can you say it?
All right. Becky's been dating this boy, and he's listening for the first time today.
I don't know he's listening, so can
He might. All right, he might not be. We won't name him. It's fine. What we're going to... She's so funny. Anyway, point being, you wanted to talk about some of the conversations that you guys are having about death, because his... dad also passed.
Yeah,
when you
I think
guys,
this is what's really interesting, and I really don't not to name names, or I feel really I don't want it to become a big thing. But what I did find really interesting is we've talked a lot about dating and and dead parents, and that's been a huge topic for us to navigate. And
what has come up?
Well, so we basically met, and on our first date, we realised that both our dads had died in the same year.
That's crazy.
Which is kind of like crazy.
Spooky, spooky.
Yeah, it is spooky. But then it kind of made me think. It's, you know, about trauma bonding and this whole conversation. Ooh. And we have not been trauma bonding, but it's so, I feel like when you're both in a position where you have gone through something quite traumatic, that most people, you know, our age, like our friends, haven't really gone through that, it's really difficult to navigate a relationship or whatever that situation is when... I don't know, you've both been through something more than everyone else.
Yeah.
And you don't want to become like such a big thing, but at the same time, it is, because you both lost someone that's like super important to you, and that is going to...
Well, I think that's...
That is going to come up in conversation, and it is going to impact whatever that is. And I guess I just wanted to kind of talk about... I want your advice, basically, Tasha.
What, about how to deal with it? Well, because I went on a date, didn't I? And I told him that... My mum was dead.
Yeah, you did.
I did.
You knew you were going to do that.
I did. We did discuss this. We discussed whether or not we should say it. And I did say to my therapist that I wasn't going to, that I was going to try and not talk about my dead mum at my first date.
Mm.
Did it work? No. Because he asked, bless him. He did actually ask. And I just think it's one of those things. It's just a fact. Like, it's unavoidable, really, isn't it? Like, if it's a fact, then it's just a fact. Like, at the end of the day, it's going to come up in conversation. Like, what do your parents do?
But I think, and it comes, of course, and then you're like... And obviously, you are going to have to talk about it, and that's really important. And we advocate for talking about death.
Totally.
It'd be weird if we didn't do that
100%.
On dates. But
and also, I feel like you share common ground.
We do, but I think that's what's scary, because there's two of you going, oh my God, this is too good.
But isn't that nice? Oh, I see.
You know?
What, you're scared about the future before it's even begun?
Slightly. Like, just,
oh, yeah, that's fair.
Just kind of scared about things ending or going wrong, because, you know, when I just feel like really good things happen, I always get scared.
No, the curse.
It's
don't,
not gonna...
No, but let's talk about the curse, people. Let's talk about the curse for a second, okay?
You like the curse.
We do like to talk about the curse. Just because your mum died doesn't mean you'll never have nice things again. Just want to put that out there in the universe. Just because your dad died doesn't mean you can't have nice things. And just because someone cheats on you, it doesn't mean that you can't have nice things. Or just because, you know, you lose a leg doesn't mean that you... I'm just making...
Nice
no, but
things,
this is
yeah.
what I'm saying. Like, you know, it's one of those things. Like, you know, don't laugh. It's
I'm
very
not
serious.
Laughing.
Because I think that when you get something so... not. I mean, traumatizing, I suppose, is the word. When you get something that's so big and so intense and so harrowing, and then something else bad happens. It took me so long to get out of this rut, but for so long, I spent my life kind of existing in a world where I was just like, well, that's just my luck. Like, that's just my lot. Like, it's the irony of my life. It's a big joke. My mum died, and then this
happened.
How
do we shift that mentality?
I think you literally just have to fight through it. Like, I'm not gonna lie, it's not fun. I don't think. I think you just have to be like, no, like, oh sure, have fun. Like,
who's in the toilet now?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's true though.
No,
it's true.
No, but I think that is where I'm at. I'm like, I need to be more positive about things and be like, just enjoy it and stop overthinking everything. But I'm really jealous of my friends that don't have to think about that. They just have, like, I don't know what's happened to them. They maybe have, like, maybe they've just broken their leg. And then they meet someone else and they've also broken their leg. And they bond over breaking their leg.
Oh, you're just a bit, it's just, I get what you mean, actually. Because you're like, now bonding, because you're bonding over something really sad.
Yeah.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, but I actually think that's nice. Because in a situation where, like, for example, on my day.
Oh, let's bring it back to Natasha. Weren't we talking about me?
Sorry, I'm just trying to relate. I'm trying to, like, you know.
Yeah,
I'm
go,
trying
go,
to relate.
Go, go.
Okay. Like, I basically said, like,
I'm in love with you.
No, that is not what I said. Thank you. Let's take a deep breath, Becky. I know you're very excited about me going on a date, but look, it's not a big deal. Okay. I was like, yeah, my mum's dead, right? And then he was like, yeah, you win.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, yeah, that's exactly the response I'd like, you know? That's absolutely correct. He was like, yeah, I can't really top that. So
is that what he said?
Pretty much. I mean, I'm not going to go into details of our private discussion.
Of course
but
not.
Like, I actually think that's like, you know what? At the end of the day, yeah. And actually, like I said, we just kind of, I said it, we moved on.
Yeah.
We started talking about other things. I think that there's like a level of like...
acknowledging it.
Yeah. And like, there's a level, obviously,
on,
like,
yeah,
if you both have it in common, like, it's important to chat about and uncover. And I think because you both share common ground of like trauma, it's obviously going to come
I think
up.
I'm just jealous of my friends that haven't gone through it. And they can just go in, they can just enter into
a...
Okay, fine, but that is what it's really about, is I'm just fucking annoyed, actually. That's what it's about. I'm really pissed off.
You're just pissed that people have it easier. Or, no, not even easier. You're just pissed that people don't have a dead dad.
Yeah, I'm really pissed, actually.
I think that's okay. Good for you.
I'm really angry!
Yes! As you should be! Okay, well, that took a dramatic turn.
I'm actually really angry.
That escalated quite quickly. No, but I think this is good for you.
I think that's what it is. I'm angry.
You're pissed off.
You're
angry that you can't just have a relationship without your dead dad being part of the
Yeah, and it's not even an issue. But why am I making it into an issue? But if my dad wasn't dead, then I wouldn't make it into an issue.
Amen.
Do you hear what I'm saying?
I do hear what you're saying. And I think that's valid. Your anger is valid.
Thank you.
No, you're welcome. And I think it's important to let it out. And I'm sure that he'll appreciate understanding that too. And I'm sure, in a way, he'll probably feel the same. Like, there's a level of anger that comes from losing a parent or losing a loved one. There is an anger of like, where the fuck did you go? Like, why have you made this big dent or, you know, thing?
I can literally feel my heart racing.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, little bit of a bubble there. Little bit of boiling.
Bit of a boil.
We're going to do some boxing.
Breathwork.
We're going to start fighting in the studio. I think what we should do is, Becky, we're going to go on a break soon. And then
we actually are going to go on a break now, so maybe I'll try.
You're going to do some jumping jacks. You can do some star jumps.
Okay.
And maybe some
meditation.
Yeah.
For 3 minutes.
I think, don't worry, listeners, Becky's all right.
I'm fine.
Having a heart attack.
I'm absolutely fine.
All
I just needed that. Thanks, Tash.
You're welcome. And shall I take us out?
You can take us out and maybe...
Now we're going to the break.
Everyone know that Nathan Stillwell is going to be in the studio.
Nathan Stillwell is going to be in the studio and we're going to go to a break. And then after that, we're going to chat to Nathan about sister dying. And Becky is going to get her heart rate right down. Bye.
Bye, guys.
FUBAR Radio.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison, my SAS sister. That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either because obviously they can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, what the fuck are those? And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yeah. The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
I am joined now by Ricardo Mighty. He is the CEO of Mighty Labs.
I just think if you're going to get into crypto, you just can't think short term. If you're trying to, I don't know, like pay your bills next month and you think I'm going to invest in crypto this month and then I'm going to take the gains out and do something with, you just can't think like that, because 99.9% of the time, the market doesn't work the way you want it to work. It works how it's going to work. The longer you have your investment in crypto, most likely the better it will do.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
I am joined now by Ricardo Mighty. He is the CEO of Mighty Labs.
I just think if you're going to get into crypto, you just can't think short term. If you're trying to, I don't know, like pay your bills next month and you think I'm going to invest in crypto this month and then I'm going to take the gains out and do something with, you just can't think like that, because 99.9% of the time, the market doesn't work the way you want it to work. It works how it's going to work. The longer you have your investment in crypto, most likely the better it will do.
Business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Hello, welcome back to Death of Funny Business. Welcome, Nathan, to the studio.
Hi, Nathan.
Hi.
Do you want to give us a little intro about
yourself?
Who are you?
Okay, so my name's Nathan. I'm an assisted dying campaigner, which is quite a weird job, not your standard run-of-the-mill jobs. And it is my full-time job to try and change the law to make the right to die legal, essentially.
Wow.
So that's people who are terminally ill. They've got their, you know, their real last months ahead of them, and they would like to have that choice, that option of having an assisted death. That's what I do.
And how did you get into this? How did you get into it?
Anybody who works in kind of like politics, campaigning, all that kind of stuff like that, no one has a direct route. There's not like a university degree is like change the law. So mine was like weird and wonderful and convoluted. And before this, I worked at the Joe Cox Foundation, which is a foundation set up after the murder of the MP Joe Cox during the Brexit referendum. So that was quite, you know, hardcore, serious, kind of emotive subject as well. And then it was kind of as simple as like a job application came up as I was on a train home to see my parents. And it instantly, I was just like, you know, I've had death in my family where it would have probably, I never spoke about it to them, which is, I think, something we can chat about, is you don't really talk about death. It's very un-British to talk about that. But they, I think some family members would have probably wanted that choice and that option, but I never know because I never spoke about it. And I remember, so I got this train home, the job application came up for this role, and I kind of like trepidatiously like spoke to my parents about it, being like, oh, this job's come up, I think I could be good at it, like how would it work? And they were like, absolutely go for it. It's like, we can 100% see you in that job. And that's as simple as that. I kind of fell into it. You know, if you'd asked me 5 years ago what I'd be doing, I wouldn't.
Wasn't
even close.
So do you want to tell us a bit about what assisted dying is and like how it affects people and kind of
a summary?
So that it internationally, there are like 31 jurisdictions, that's countries and states, that have legalized assisted dying. And it broadly falls into two camps. The first camp is just for the terminally ill, just for people who are dying. And the second camp is for people who have incurable and intolerable conditions that won't necessarily cause their death. And so places like Spain, Belgium, the Netherlands, Switzerland, very famously, have that broader option where you can have it if you're suffering. And then 11 US states, most of Australia, New Zealand, have it for just the terminally ill.
Wow.
And essentially it is, you know, when people reach that point in their lives where their suffering becomes unbearable, where when it becomes too much, they have that option of going through basically quite a safe legal route. So it almost always involves two independent doctors. So you'd sign some sort of written declaration and say, this is something I really want for myself. You go to the doctor and they would make sure that you have the condition, that there's nothing that can be done to alleviate the symptoms. There's nothing that can be done to control the symptoms in any way that makes your life kind of bearable under, you know, this is very much around you. You know, that we say my death, my decision, because it very much is my death, my decision. And so there'd be a whole process. And then at the end of the process, the doctor would say, you know, I'm going to administer some drugs, or they would give you some medication for you to take yourself. They'd say, you understand what this drug is going to do. It's going to end your life. You know, there's all these checks and balances. And then the patient takes life-ending medication on their terms, on the day that they want, at the moment they want, essentially. That's what it is.
And what does that look like when someone ends their life, that moment when they take that?
Well, you know, we have had accusations that we kind of glorify or beautify this kind of process. But I'm going to stick by my morals. It is quite a beautiful process. So I spoke to, there was this week in Parliament, there's been evidence sessions where they've spoken to experts, but they also spoke to people with lived experience. And one woman, a British woman whose family lived in Australia, basically said, my father's death was like the Australian dream. You know, it was on a beach on a sunny day. The whole family was around them. Everybody got to say goodbye. And then he, you know, he took the life-ending medication on a day of his choosing. And I've spoken to quite a few families who have gone to Dignitas in Switzerland, so the, you know, the relatively famous assisted dying centre there. And again, they say something pretty similar. So I spoke to the family of a person called Dawn Voice Cooper, and she played her favourite song. She had a glass of champagne. She said, you know, this is it. I'm done. Like, you know, I'm so glad for my suffering to end and to do it with friends and people I know. And that is the most common experience of assisted death. You know, those two things, both that kind of control, and it's very deeply personal. You know, so I really can't express enough that a lot of people don't want this, don't want to go anywhere near it. You know, they want a natural death, no matter what that involves. You know, this is, we are talking a small proportion of people, but for those small proportion of people, it's very much, I'm taking control, I know what I want, I'm doing this for me, and that's what I'm going to do.
And to be, you know, to be able to choose yourself, I can imagine that must be some sort of, like, I don't know, I know so many people die of in such awful ways, because
I mean, if you're in tons of pain at all times, and the only way out is this way, I mean, I can completely understand why even a small percentage of people choose to do so. And I think that, like you said before, there's a level of control and a level of dignity that you don't get when, especially like when you, especially when you're in the health system or something like that. I mean, hospice care is like a lot of hospice care is amazing, but it can feel very sterile. And
and we don't really talk about, we've never really talked about, we've never talked about assisted dying on this on this show. But what is the current state in the UK at the moment then, and kind of like where are we going?
Yeah.
So it's completely illegal in the UK. It's defined by the Suicide Act, which was made in the 60s. And quite rightly, that the 60s Suicide Act was to decriminalise suicide. You remember, it used to be, people also say commit suicide, and you can't say that because it's committing offence. Suicide is no longer offence. So they changed the law in the 60s to legalise suicide, essentially. But what they did, which makes sense at the time, was they added basically a clause saying it's against the law to encourage or assist in someone else's suicide. And again, that, of course, we completely agree, encouraging someone's suicide is horrifying. That should be illegal completely. But what that did was criminalize the assisting part, meaning a doctor, for example, if they were going to administer too much morphine, or if someone was going to take their loved one abroad for an assisted death, they can face the full wrath of the law, essentially. And it gets even a bit more complicated there, because essentially it's really uncommon that someone will go to jail for taking someone to Switzerland or ending the life of their loved one if it was, you know, out of compassion because they were terminally ill. And to make it, what's weird is the reason that is like that is there was a woman called Debbie Purdy, and she was, you know, an avid dancer, and she met her husband, Latin American dancing, because her husband Omar was from Latin America, and they fell in love. And then one day she noticed her feet getting heavier and heavier. She was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis.
Oh gosh.
And so she knew kind of that kind of, she knew where she was going and where her body was taking her, essentially. And she took her case to the courts in a very different way to other people. She didn't claim about herself at all. She didn't say, I want this right for myself. She said, I have a right to know what will happen to Omar if he takes me to Switzerland, if he assists in my death. And so the courts actually ruled in her favour and said, you do actually have a right to know. It's against your human rights not to know what would happen to the person you love, in that sense. So the director of public prosecutions, who at the time is Keir Starmer, came up with guidelines essentially saying, these are the guidelines that make you more likely to be thrown in jail, you know, to be prosecuted for this. And these are the guidelines that make you less likely. And it's fairly obvious things, like if you have something to gain from the person's death, if you're going to get money, if it's, you know, clear that it's not, you know, that you're doing it for yourself, then that makes you more likely.
And it's like malicious.
Malicious, obviously more likely. But if the person's dying, if they've made repeated requests, for example, for an assisted death or something like that, then that makes you less likely. But it's basically, it's a messy law. It's a really messy law. And so what, at the moment, there are two bills going through. There's one in Scotland, one in England and Wales, both basically trying to get rid of the messiness and say, if you want an assisted death, here's like a route that you can take for a legalized kind of compassionate, autonomous route. And so that's where we are right now. Both of those kind of bills are going through the Scottish Parliament and the Westminster Parliament.
And then, and like in a dream world, what would assisted dying look like? And like, what is your campaign kind of like? What would be the ideal for you guys?
The ideal would be, you know, so, so patient-centric. Like, we're really kind of fighting this kind of prevailing idea with politicians at the moment that this needs to be kind of super safe and it needs to go through all these routes and regulations. But like, at the end of the day, the person is by definition dying, by definition suffering. So imagine making them jump for unnecessary hoops and regulations and everything like that. So the ideal is that if someone is suffering so much that they can't continue to do the meaningful activities that make their life worth living for them, again, it's all about the individual here, then they should be able to go to a doctor and have a really meaningful, open, honest conversation about it. Where the doctor should turn around and say, have you tried therapy? Have you tried palliative care? What sort of things have you tried? But then that's also balanced with the right of someone to say no. So, for example, you can really imagine someone with cancer having chemotherapy, having a couple of rounds of chemotherapy, and then being like, that's enough.
I'm good. Yeah.
You know, please don't force me through any of these hoops and everything like that. And for them to be able to go through, again, still have all these safety measures, but to be given or administered life-ending medication on a day of their choice, a moment of their choice, most likely within their own homes. That's where the majority of people, when they think about dying, which they don't, but the majority of people think about this, they want it in their own homes, in their own beds.
And that word, I mean... It drives me mad, but that word safety, it's not the safety of patients. It's for the safety of politicians at the end of the day. Like, politicians aren't looking after the people that you are. It's they're looking after their own backs. And I think that, it's absolutely wild that our health system, let alone our assisted dying regulations, like, are not... patient-centric.
Well, what are the reasons? Could you talk us through the reasons for the bill not being passed and why people are against the assisted dying?
Yeah. I mean, to hit the nail on the head with the most controversial one straight away, religion. There clearly is a religious force here. And even then, like, to make everything I'm saying is so complicated, but like, when you poll religious people, when you speak to religious people, you know, like Catholics, Protestants, Muslims, Jews, anything like that, a lot of them will actually say they support it completely. It's very much the institutions here.
Yeah, the actual
you know, people saying that this idea of sanctity of life, this idea that your life belongs to a God and not to
the leaders rather than the followers.
Really that. And I mean, they try to claim that there's, you know, that's this thing in the past. But like, the moment this bill was announced to change the law, the first people to talk against it was the Archbishop of Canterbury, you know, the bishops. Like, there really is obviously a religious force there. Now, you know, there are other arguments. That there's quite a big kind of disability voice at the moment, and we understand that, and that centres around, you know, quite a few disabled people have said,
okay,
I've been treated really badly my whole life. you know, I don't really trust the government or trust the health service to make this choice for me. And I think I'm going to very much understand that sort of rationale. But at the end of the day, it goes against, you know, this is your choice.
Exactly.
You can't actually get anywhere near this until you've signed a written declaration.
Yeah, yourself.
Yourself. Yeah. Like, it really is an autonomous. So that
do you think people just aren't aware of how it would actually work? Do you think people are actually just scared because they suddenly think they hear a sister dying unknown, and they go, does that mean I have to sign up for that? Do you know what I mean? Is that part of it?
Totally rational as well when you think of it like that. You know, just not knowing how it works, and then, you know, having this, these voices combine, you know that there are religious voices that go, oh, you know, we must, you know, this is dangerous for disabled people.
Yeah.
But even then, when we poll and ask disabled people, you know, when we actually ask their own voices, they, you know, a good majority say, no, this is something that I would want for myself, or this is something that I believe should be legal for others.
And I'm assuming that it wouldn't be a situation where there could be a secondary party that could, like, sign on your own behalf, which I think is really important as well, because I think there comes, like, that kind of fear where it's like, well, what if I was incapacitated and someone was put in charge of me? What's it called? What's the word? I've forgotten the word, but I'm just curious about that. Like, obviously that's a complete no. Like, that isn't going to be a thing at all.
Yeah, so we've counted in the bill, you're asked a minimum of 8 times if you want to go ahead.
Oh, wow.
And that's the minimum, you know, like, obviously the doctor or, you know... Like,
and what's the time period?
That's being worked out. So at the very moment they're hashing out the details of how long it would take to go through the process. I mean, that some people argue a baking and waiting period so that people have time to reflect. But then the other argument is probably most people listening right now know what they think about this.
Yeah.
They know whether it's something they do for themselves. And obviously that can change, you know, when you get a condition, like, and all these other factors, but it's very deeply personal. So I'm a little bit against too many waiting periods. And I spoke with a family, the Tuckley family, and it was, you know, the husband, Dan, had a really aggressive terminal cancer diagnosis. Mm. And it was weeks between the diagnosis and the death.
Oh, wow.
So they got a kind of private jet and they chartered it to Switzerland because they were like, the expression they used, which was, I think, was so powerful, was that kind of, you know, like, cancer didn't kill Dan, Dan killed cancer.
Mm.
You know, they really,
nice.
It was really clear that Dan was just like, nope, this is, you know, this is not for me. I want to do this, took control. And they said that sort of story makes me think we have to be really careful again about waiting periods, because for his timeline, it was so short.
Mm.
So you really have to be, you have to put, you know.
And I guess when you are ill, I mean, the only thing that I can relate it to is my dad, but he wasn't my dad when he was going through chemo and he was ill. So I don't think that he...
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I think that he was probably slightly embarrassed about how he was...
Well, it...
You know, how he was interacting with us, and he wasn't as funny as he was normally was, and he was kind of losing himself. So I guess I can imagine if that was going on for a long period of time, you would want some sort of, like you said, ownership and, to not lose your dignity. So I can definitely see the reason, especially if if someone's going through a real kind of difficult
illness. I think the loss of personality is, like, hugely important. Like, I mean, I didn't get to see Mum and her last week because she was just so unwell, completely sick. And, you know, I think about your dad, it's like, he not even just embarrassment, but just a complete inability to be yourself. And, like, if those are your last feelings, like, how wonderful would it be that that isn't the way
you're remembered,
the way that, not necessarily that you're remembered, but that, you know, that their last moments, you know, the person that you're, you know, is passing, like, you know, that their last moments were their own. They were in their control, they were of their, you know, spirit, instead of something that was kind of controlled by a sickness or a disease or something.
Absolutely. And there was the evidence sessions in Parliament just last week, and at the very end they got people with lived experience, you know, give evidence around it. And one woman was her and her husband lived in Spain, where they've very recently legalized it, and the way it was described, like, the entire room was in tears, but, like, it was also kind of, like, beautiful in the sense of she described that kind of he had his cowboy boots on when he died, because that that's who he was and that's what he wanted. He was fiercely independent, so he didn't want to go. He lived in rural Spain and didn't want to go anywhere, so he was like, you're coming to me. And apparently he kind of took the medication, kind of winked at his wife, and then was like,
oh,
yeah, yeah. And it was really emotional. Mm. And like, it was so important that politicians, because again, the politicians right now are talking about the nitty gritty and where to draw the lines and everything like that.
Yeah.
And when you had this crazily like sincere moment of this man winking to his wife as his final moments, and she said that that's my final moments of him. Like, how beautiful were my final moments that I've got? Yeah.
Instead of in a hospital bed or something.
And then she was like, what if we hadn't moved to Spain? What if we lived in the UK? What would my final moments of my husband be burned in time?
Tired, exhausted, pain.
How can you argue with that? I mean, what do people say?
It's difficult. I mean, so, you know, there's the religious argument, there's the disability argument. There's also this argument as well of, like, people feeling like a burden at the very, very end of their lives.
I see, yeah.
Which, again, is a complicated argument. I mean, I can do kind of the facts and figures of it. It's like, you know, they will throw at us, you know, in Oregon, the U.S. state of Oregon, where assisted dying is legalized, 40% of people at the end of their lives cited being a burden. And that's kind of the stat that's kind of thrown at us all the time. But firstly, if we contextualize it, that was in, they were asked so many things, you know, why are you doing this? And it was like, number one was pain. Number two was like loss of autonomy.
Yes.
Number three was dignity.
Yeah.
And then like number 10, it's like burden.
Well, it's like how does it affect other people? Or, you know, how do you feel around your family or whatever? Yeah. And of course you're going to say, I feel like I'm struggling. Like, I can't support them anymore and they're just supporting me and that's all we do.
And then if we poll people who die of natural causes, they have an even higher rate of saying, I feel like a burden at the end of their lives. And at the end of the day, you know, giving someone agency and choice is going to make them feel less like a burden because it's their choice. And then if I can go even stronger, like, it's my death, it's my decision. Like, you're not the thought police. It's under no chance are you going to decide what I can decide. You know, like, that's a decision for me and my reason for doing it. It's my reason for doing
it.
And, you know, your job is to give me the choice and go away.
And I suppose there's a bigger conversation here, especially, and you were talking about institutions, you know, like you said, it's... How can it possibly be someone else's, some huge governing body's decision whether I die in or out of pain?
Mm.
And I mean, like the religious part as well is wild, especially seeing as, you know, if you're talking about stats where people like going to church aren't that bothered, and yet it's just the institution kind of upholding this narrative that this is somehow evil or...
So how does it work? You're obviously campaigning for this. What can people do? Like, what's happening in the background to change things?
I mean, like, the one thing is, like, get angry. Like, come on. Like, a lot... I think when we do, like, polling as well, like, if you went to the pub and spoke to loads of people, most of them would be like, oh, absolutely, but who's doing something about it? Like, get angry. Like, you know, make a stand about this. Talk about it on social media, tweet. Also, you know, a standard one is writing to your MP, and a lot of people can get a bit like, oh, writing to your MP, but like... I think
I've done that before. Yeah. Not about this, but...
yeah, like, oh, is that all I can do? But, you know, it does make a difference. We know it makes a difference.
Yeah.
And then if you have a personal story particularly, you know, tell your MP, you know, and if you can meet them and say, like, listen to my personal story and then do it. And, it, you know, it doesn't matter if your MP voted in favour or voted against. Like, if they voted in favour, motivate them to do more. If they voted against... you know, make sure that you know that you're against that fundamentally. I think that, you know, get motivated. You know, this will, you know, death will affect you one day, will affect your family members one day.
Indeed.
I know that this is something I want for me. My family know that it's something that they choose. They, you know, every single time I go home to see my parents, they're like, how's it going? Like, hurry up, like, really.
And do you think it's something that we can achieve?
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard because, like, you know, the opposition is so strong and so organized.
Yeah.
Like, these are the same people who fought against abortion rights.
Yeah.
And they did it very, very well. And they've learned from the abortion campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, literally, if you go on the Parliament website and you look at, you know, the it's called the Terminally Ill Adults End of Life Bill.
Mm.
If you go up, they've just published, like, evidence that was sent into them. One of the top ones was the Society for Protection of Unborn Children. You know, it's the anti-abortion campaigners.
Yes. Yeah, the same people.
They're at it again.
Wow.
So they're going for it. So
I mean, isn't it, and that's what's crazy about that is that, you know, the anti-abortion
argument is that you're killing someone, but you can't choose to take your own life. Nothing is your choice, apparently.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not a contradiction at all. The anti-abortion people are fighting against us, our own choices. How is that? Well, I suppose it is its own contradiction, really.
It's anyway. Been super interesting, Nathan. Thanks so much for coming in the
studio. Thank you, Nathan.
Educating us all.
I think the theme of today's episode is anger, and now
Are you angry now?
I'm getting angry because actually I find it like so frustrating that this isn't a simple thing. How is
It's when you don't have autonomy over something.
Yeah,
it
like
is
how in this day and age do we not have autonomy over it? And how can people that we love go to jail or get fined for helping us be out of complete and utter pain? Anyway, thank you so much, Nathan.
Thank
it's been
you.
Lovely chatting to you. And I think we're going to go to a break.
We are going to go to a break. Wonderful. So see you guys later. Thanks.
FUBAR Radio.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison. My yes, I yes, sister. That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either because obviously I can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, what the fuck are those? And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen, they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
Is the sound of your mates alive? Is getting to more gigs this year and the next? Is the sound of saying, I got you, mate? Is the sound of mates enjoying even more of this? Is the sound of mates getting home instead of here? Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
Mr. Later Williams, hello. Mate, can we just address that you did Strictly Come Dancing?
I know, people were quite upset about that, to be fair. But listen, not the first musical theatre performer to be on Strictly. It won't be the last. I've never watched a full season from the start to the end. So when it actually got to it, I was like, whoa, like there's so many different styles. I was like, oh, and Nikita, I love him, but he was really pushing me to be the best that I could be.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
I am joined now by Ricardo Mighty. He is the CEO of Mighty Labs.
I just think if you're going to get into crypto, you just can't think short term. If you're trying to, I don't know, like pay your bills next month and you think I'm going to invest in crypto this month and then I'm going to take the gains out and do something with, you just can't think like that, because 99.9% of the time, the market doesn't work the way you want it to work. It works how it's going to work. The longer you have your investment in crypto, most likely the better it will do.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
That's me, Natasha Spencer-Levy.
That was really, really interesting.
That was,
so informative.
You know what? It is the angry episode. I am, I got a bit cross. It just feels so, it just feels so obvious to me, like, especially having seen people in pain like that before. I don't know. It seems like such an obvious choice, but...
But it's not. We have no choice
have
over
to,
anything, do we?
Yeah, no.
Oh, well, sorry. I kicked something.
Go on.
I'm angry.
We're so mad she's destroying the studio.
We've got a game.
Okay. Why? No, I'm kidding.
Should I repeat what you just said during the break?
No, I upset Becky a little bit.
Do you want to hear what she said? So I said, why am I the one reading? Because I sometimes
you
struggle with reading.
You always read. You
and
always
you
do
said,
the game.
I said, because you wouldn't be able to answer the actual question.
So rude.
Becky, I think you would say that about yourself.
You would.
I would.
But it sounds worse. Okay, it's okay when it comes from me,
I'm
not
sorry.
You.
I'm sorry. I don't mean it like in a mean way. This is
Natasha turned
episode.
Up with this key ring.
Oh, yeah. Go and tell them about the key ring.
But I'm angry now, so I don't know if I feel...
Well, all right,
no, it was really
fine.
Sweet. It was really sweet. So she turned up with this key ring, and it was one of those key rings that you had when you were about 10 years old, and yeah. It said, like, best with half a heart.
Friends.
The other half. And it was pink and red.
Yeah, which is
And
our
I
home.
Got the pink one, and you got the red one.
Yeah, because you were pink and red.
It's just really sweet.
Because I love you.
That's really sweet.
I just thought it was nice, and because, you know, maybe you can't answer the questions, but I got your key ring. Don't be mad.
Anyway.
Are we going to play again?
This is a higher or lower.
God.
Ways of dying.
Go on, give it a go. All right, here we
so,
go.
So, the odds of drowning, are they higher or lower than dying from a fall?
Lower.
Higher.
Fuck. What? Drowning over a fall?
Yeah.
Surely people fall more often than they drown.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced.
It's higher.
Okay, all right.
And the odds of being attacked by a dog, higher or lower than a fall?
Lower.
Yes.
Yay. Done.
1 point.
I'm winning.
Odds of choking on food, higher or lower than being attacked by a dog?
Higher.
Yes.
Fuck yes.
2 points.
I feel like this is a good game for me. Touch wood. Oh, God.
Higher or lower? Odds of electrocution?
Over choking on food?
Yeah.
I'm going to go for... this is great radio, guys.
Yeah, you're supposed to talk on the radio.
I'm going to say choking on food, higher.
Lower.
Oh, never mind. Okay, so...
We're going to...
Electrocution.
Yeah, lower. Odds of dying in a motor vehicle crash, higher or lower than electrocution?
Higher or lower than electrocution? Higher.
Yeah.
Yay!
Stung by a bee, hornet or wasp, higher or lower than a crash?
Lower.
Yeah.
Right.
Higher or lower, odds of being struck by lightning? Or a bee?
Or a bee?
Oh, come on.
Lower?
Yes.
Jesus, all right.
How many people do you know that have been struck by lightning?
I just had to think about the question.
Have you been stung by a bee?
Yeah, in my eyebrow when I was 7, and a wasp flew into my fringe, got stuck in there, and then stung me on the eyebrow. My whole eyeball swelled up.
Why? I didn't think you'd have a story. You always have a story for everything.
Yeah, I always have a story for everything.
Odds of an accidental opioid overdose.
Got very dark very quickly. I guess against being struck by lightning. Yeah. Probably the opioids. Higher.
Sorry. Plane crash, higher or lower than an opioid overdose?
Lower.
Yes. Big word here, Tash.
How many of
the I know. Yaz is speaking in my ears. I know how to say cataclysmic storm. Is that higher or lower than a crash?
Higher.
That's good. I'm not
how
taking.
There's
so many. Can we do one more?
Yeah.
The odds of being assaulted with a gun. I didn't write this.
Where?
Higher or lower than a cataclysmic storm?
Higher, probably.
Yes, it is higher. 9 out of 10.
Okay. Oh, wow. That's probably
that was
my
really
best
good.
One. Yeah, but I guess it's a 50-50 chance I get it. So
that was really good. Are you feeling calmer, less angry?
I mean, I feel like we've kind of aggressed on each other. You're mad at me. I'm mad at the government.
Yeah.
And the abortion people.
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot to be angry about, though, in life. I think
there is. And you know what? The world, like, honestly, I know I'm going to sound like an absolute boomer. Love you all, boomers. But the world is fucking dying and burning. And it drives me around the fucking bend that people still buy from Shein. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't.
Like, you know, don't talk to me about the cost of living crisis until you stop buying from, you know, cheap child labor, you know? I mean, that's the least you can fucking do.
And stop using ChatGPT, apparently.
Yeah, sorry. Becky's been using ChatGPT occasionally to come up with questions for me.
Basically. I can't think of anything myself.
And I basically said to her, we're better than that. You don't need the AI. You are more than clever enough to...
Why is that bad for the environment, though?
Well, okay, here's a little stat for you.
Is this fake news? Or is this Natasha Spencer leaving news?
This is not fake news. This is a fact, okay?
Fact me.
Just because, right, we've forgotten that computing power takes a lot of energy, for one. Do you remember when we used to have big computers as kids and they used to get really hot? Do you remember your old laptop? And sometimes your laptop gets a bit hot. That's because you've got memory running in there and a I don't know, fucking program running, right? You have Sims. Something running. Yeah, Sims, right? Okay. So ChatGPT doesn't work on a big, you know, console that we have at home anymore, but it does have a base. It has a physical being. It has a physical electric box that lives in probably Silicon Valley somewhere, right? And they have to cool those. I don't fucking know what they're called. Fucking power bases.
Yeah, oh my god, they're called like power plants.
Yeah, I don't know. No, that's not a power plant. Oh. I mean, they have to cool down the computers, basically, right? So they have to cool down ChatGPT's servers.
Servers!
Thank you.
Server farms.
They have to cool down the servers with water, okay? How else do you think it's going? Can you concentrate? Can you look at me, please? No, you're not. You're getting bored and distracted. And I think this is very important. Okay. Every time, guys, you ask ChatGPT one question, you use the equivalent of a bottle of water to cool down the system. Okay?
Fuck.
It is ChatGPT AI is using enormous amounts of water to do what? Shit that humans have been doing forever. Okay?
So we're killing our intelligence and we're killing...
we're not even killing. We're just wasting it. You are more than clever. I am more than creative enough to do shit. You're more than creative enough to do shit. I think that it's fine occasionally, you know, if it's, you know, sometimes it's useful in certain aspects. But day to day, you don't need to be asking ChatGPT what you're going to have for breakfast, my guys. Don't ask it to make you a workout routine. Maybe. I'm just angry. I'm just talking. I've just gone all lib.
To be fair, I asked it really weird things. Yeah. Like, but I ask, it's like a doctor. I'll be like, hi, why am I going through excessive sweating? And then it comes up with all of these amazing answers.
Okay.
And it's definitely easier than getting a doctor's appointment.
But that in itself is fucked. The fact that you have to ask a fucking robot that is probably not going to give you advice, like it might not necessarily give you advice that's helpful or could be damaging or like not correct, over being able to see your GP.
Yeah.
This is a message to Keir Starmer. This is a message to Keir Starmer, who, by the way, is spending all of our fucking money on infrastructure for AI and making the UK the AI hub of the world. Great. I would just like to be diagnosed with arthritis. That's all. I want 20 minutes with a rheumatologist. Is that too much to ask? Right. This is an angry episode.
Shit me.
I'm good.
You good?
I think so.
It's good. This is a place to be vocal and express
a lot. The first half, you were cross. Now I've had a cross moment.
Yeah. What are you going to do tonight to unwind?
I'm going
to
go home and go to sleep. I'm so knackered.
You're so tired.
I have to be up. I have to leave the house at 7 tomorrow to go to work again for a whole day.
Life.
Yeah. Well, then, you know, sometimes we have life. Life, death, and everything in between.
Well, are you happy to wrap up now?
No.
No, she's not happy to wrap up.
Can you give us...
Okay,
we're not ready, are we? We have 2 minutes.
I want to know one good thing that happened today.
Ooh.
My mum used to do this when we were going through grief. It's so toxic. Toxic positivity.
I don't think that's toxic.
Your dad's just died, but one good thing that's happened today, Becky.
Fucking hell, Susie's just trying her best here. Jesus.
Go.
One good thing. I ate an entire baguette. Not an entire one, just half. Nice. With my soup that I made for lunch, which was really delicious. And I saw my work bestie, Faye, who listens to the show, and she's the best. Love you.
That's really sweet.
What about you? What's your one?
Best thing that's happened today. Best thing that's happened today was that I had a cup of coffee this morning.
That's it. We've done an entire show. You got given a key ring, just want to say.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
The key ring. I love the key ring.
She
key
got
ring
given
was
a
my favorite.
Best friend key ring, and that's not
I
even.
Did. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I love you to bits. And I love everyone.
Yeah. And
so let's finish on a bit of love.
Let's
so thanks so
love.
Much, Nathan Stillwell, for being in the studio and educating us. And thanks, Tash, for being an awesome co-host. I do love you.
Thank you for being the best co-host too. I love you. And follow us on Sorry For Your Lost Loves at Instagram and Becky, and you will find us.
You'll
there.
You'll find us on the
and
online.
Follow FUBAR and ask us questions, all kinds of
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, ask us questions, and then next week maybe we can answer them.
Yeah, and we'll be back next week 5 p.m. on Tuesday for Death, A Funny Business.
Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
Bye.
Bye.